very unprofessional. You know that.
Oh, you have to be professional?
No, especially not on boogie nights.
Yeah, it's going to be very hard to be professional. Yeah, no. Like, well, at least clean.
Clean, yeah. Yeah. There we go. Yeah.
I'm going to try, but it's...
I'm not.
Little, yeah, I figured.
Iggy Pop! Amen! Let it rock!
I'm a fucking idiot.
Red meat, we crave sustenance.
I'm an artist.
Hello, my name is Jimmy Capote.
Why don't you have some fun?
Fun, fun.
Tommy.
It's okay, babe.
Whoever she is, I'm gonna find her and I'm gonna hurt her.
I've spent the past 3 years learning Finnish.
I'm always home, I'm uncool.
This is a process of dehypnotization.
Shut up!
Hi, Hoff fans. Welcome to this week's edition of the P.S. I Love Hoffman podcast, our love letter to the remarkable career of the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman. I'm Brian Rodriguez.
And I'm Kyle Reinfried.
We're always home. We're always uncool. We're always ready to talk great movies. Today, Kyle, we
Boogie
have special
Nights.
Guests.
Yes.
Too.
We got Zach Bressler sitting here, my mentor. Is that a fair thing to do? You want to be...
That's kind of big. I don't
that's
know.
That's kind of... Yeah?
No, that's pressure.
That's pressure?
Yeah.
Oh boy!
But maybe stepfather? Would you
weird uncle? No, he's like, yeah. No. We're closer in age, so older brother, like a drifter older brother.
Well, today, like you mentioned, Boogie Nights. We're going to be talking about a lot of familiar relationships, if you will.
Yes.
So, perhaps this is appropriate.
Well, all right. Well, just to give a brief little, we were actually at Ramapo College, and I met Zach here. He works here, but we also work together on film productions together. Not film productions like from this movie, but you know, film productions nonetheless.
So this is your alma mater, right?
Yes.
Can't believe somebody gave you a degree, but okay.
That hasn't really paid off yet. Yeah.
Whoa.
No, it paid off actually by meeting Zach.
I was going to say.
Zach gets me a
lot. It's
about
the connections in college. It's
exactly.
Not about the paper. It's about who you meet.
So yeah, right when we decided to do this podcast and we were thinking about guests, I said to you right away, I want Zach on Boogie Nights. Zach, you're a little older than us. You saw Boogie Nights in theaters?
Yes, I did. Three or four times.
Wow. Yeah. Awesome.
Yep.
And before we get too into it, we usually have two questions we like to ask our guests.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what was the first film that you noticed Philip Seymour Hoffman in?
Well, I would say that, like, notice him as an actor, like, that he really stood out would be this film, Boogie Nights. You know, I know when I listen to your podcast for
Aww.
Money for Nothing,
Thank you.
John Cusack movie, which I also, you know, saw when it came out. I am the Philadelphia guy. That
yeah, I reference
Kyle
you.
Met.
Yeah,
he referenced me without
naming. Without naming, yeah.
But,
I didn't know if
he
wanted
was protecting
to...
the innocent. You know,
if, I didn't but... know if you wanted to say you're from Philadelphia.
Yeah,
I didn't even know you were referencing him. You didn't even mention it to me.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, at the time during that time period, I was really not, and still today, I'm not really into the big blockbusters or anything like that. So, I think I've seen Twister, but. You know, so I know that was a kind of a memorable role that everyone knows him in and stuff, but that wasn't for me. It was definitely this film. This film made an impression with me.
Yeah, and is this also, so the second question being favorite role of his, would you say this is?
Yeah, definitely. He had, you know, obviously from this point forward, like he has some really great roles in some films and stuff, which you guys will tackle at a later date, this film,
yeah,
is part of what makes it a great film is how great the characters are.
Absolutely. I mean, we've heard from a lot of people about Scotty J too. It just, ugh.
Yeah, this is definitely, so we've covered Twister and now we're getting to Boogie Nights, and Twister was like what most like audiences recognize him from. You know, your everyday moviegoers, and then it really became like actors, critics, directors, filmmakers, whatever, like this was, he really stood out in this. And I saw this, you know, back in, you know, 2003, 2004, and he just, I already knew him from like Twister and a few other roles, but I was just like, oh man, like when we get to that one scene with him and Marky Mark, that's just like.
Well, if we're comparing to Twister, right? Like Twister, getting big blockbuster, like let's be honest, like a shit script. Who cares?
Sure,
you know that
yeah.
kind of thing. And he does a lot with that, but it's also something that you could, a smart, funny guy could do a lot with that character of Dusty.
Sure.
Anyway, you know,
yeah.
this is something that's he doesn't have too many lines. It's a couple scenes, but he really just I just love his face in this. I love his like mannerisms.
Well, we've said it before, and then we'll say it when it gets to, and we reference Along Came Polly already. But it's always, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman is more talented, but we always say it's very Jack Black, you know, like you just, as far as, you know, you could have seen Jack Black in Twister.
Of course, you know, but.
And then Jack Black was almost Scotty J.
Really?
In this movie, yeah.
Really?
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah, there's a whole slew. I'm just going to get it off right away because I want to get it off. Oh boy, that's appropriate for this. But these are all of the people that were up for Marky Mark's role. You had Christian Bale, Ben Affleck, Matt Damon.
He's going to smack you if you call him Marky Mark again.
What is he going to...
He does smack people.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Mr. Wahlberg.
Yes, that's more appropriate.
I actually couldn't just remember Dirk Diggler and Eddie because he's got two names in the movie.
He does.
But yeah, Christian Bale, Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, Ethan Hawke, Joaquin Phoenix, Jason Lee. Like,
really?
Yeah, just all of them were like considered... for the role of Dirk Diggler, and then, like, so many, Leonardo DiCaprio as well, Gwyneth Paltrow was offered Roller Girl, that makes sense, because she was in Hard Eight, you had just a bunch of actors for, like, offered, like, you know, every role, and all of them turned it down, because it was, I mean, I can't name too many movies that are about the porn industry, but in 1997, that was still a very taboo subject.
Yes, I mean, this is a good time to, if you live under a rock... and you don't know what Boogie Nights is about, or Kyle, why don't you tell our audience?
Sure, one of my famous synopses. Boogie Nights is the story of the adult film director, Jack Horner, played by Burt Reynolds, and newly found talent, Eddie Adams, a.k.a. Dirk Diggler, played by Marky Mark Wahlberg. And it's set in the late 70s and early 80s. We dive into the culture of the adult film world with its cast and crew, and the issues of their lives. I made it very soap opera-esque at the end. Because there's just so much to cover in this movie.
And does it remind you of Days of Our Lives? Is that why?
I have never watched it.
I've never watched a second of that either.
Well, I actually, you know, I didn't read the synopsis before, but I mean, it does, that's one of the great aspects of the film, is that you have full character arcs for so many characters.
Yes.
Oh my God.
And yeah. that's how the film plays, is like intertwined with all those characters. That's why... I mean, that's honestly, you know, that's when I saw it in the theater, I was just blown away. It was like, it was one of those films that you go see and it's just like, it just captures you because there were so many stories going on and the characters were so great and so rounded. It wasn't, normally you get like a character or two that have this big arc and then there's the characters along, you know, that are along for the ride or whatever, but everybody, you know, has their story going along with it and it's just...
Yeah, I mean,
it's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, what an ensemble that everyone has a payoff. Like, I mean, I love Philip Seymour Hoffman in this movie, but I guess he probably has, like, the lesser of, like, the arcs, but still, he's just, like, part of this crew, part of this misfit family.
Yeah, as a writer, this is the film I saw that I was, like, just so jealous of, because, you know, I love my ensemble casts.
Yeah.
And... who else can do this? When else do you see this? That's so many like payoffs, so many arcs, and so many... oh, it's just like beautiful.
Second film of P.T. Anderson, wrote and directed it in 1997. He was, I think, 27 years old.
And you were touching on the cast, and I was thinking while I was watching this time, like, such brave choices to just say yes to this. Again,
yeah.
Second time director, yeah, he was acclaimed, but there's that whole sophomore slump thing, right?
Yeah.
You read that script, you read about like just the subject matter. Somebody else could have really screwed this up.
Yeah, there was a movie that came out like around the same time. Do you remember?
Well, there was a couple of them, right? Like,
yeah.
Like after that, there was the 54, right? Which is just like terrible.
Yeah.
Ryan Felipe, like.
Didn't he make a short film based off of Dirk Diggler? Or
yeah,
like
so that was one of the first films he made, and it was
because he created that character in a short film before he made this film.
Yeah, and actually, the actor Robert Ridgely, who plays the colonel in this film, mm-hmm. he plays Jack mm-hmm. in
well, that makes
the
sense.
Short.
I
yeah.
can see that.
But I love him as the colonel in this film.
Yeah,
he's my
good.
Next to Philip Seymour Hoffman, he is my wow. favorite actor in this movie. I love him, the colonel. Oh my God. The best introduction to a character ever, which we'll get to come to the party scene. But the actor, this is a really small, the introduction to Bucky's character. I mean, we kind of see Buck at the club in the beginning, the opening scene, but mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. when we meet him at the, this is Don Cheadle's character, when we meet him at the stereo store, the kid that he's trying to sell it to, that's the actor that played the Dirk Diggler.
Oh, that's the original
the
Dirk Diggler?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, so it's just like a couple of, you know, the main, I've never seen the short, though, but that's what I read.
Is it easy to get? I couldn't
find it.
Wow.
I mean, it might be, you know what, actually, probably the first place to look and the last place, and I haven't looked, would be on the Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah, that's possible.
But I listened to the audio commentary, and I feel like I would have seen it on there and been like, I should have watched this, but maybe I just...
Well, you'll go home and check.
Exactly.
So, just quick touch-up on this cast. A lot of people to...
Yeah, okay.
Go
so
over
we got
here,
Mr. Mark Wahlberg.
Who I thought was fantastic.
Fantastic?
Yes,
fantastic
yes.
In this film. He's awesome.
I know
some
people have shit on his, like, that performance in the past, which
I think
is so
get
stupid.
That because that moment when he comes home... from the club, or from
working, right?
From working, and his mom is yeah. just like a total bitch. Like even to like, and I'm, you know, like is that way to her husband too? But when she just tells them to get out, and I just wrote in my notes, I just put raw performance. Him just like crying. I'm getting goosebumps right now because it's like my inner fears of like my disapproval from my parents and just like telling me like that I'm a fuck up and to get out and move out.
So you've lived through this scene.
Thank God I haven't lived through this scene, but that's like I've had nightmares of scenes like this.
Gotcha.
And her just telling him to get out. He's like, why are you doing this to me? And like, oh, man.
Is this your favorite Mark Wahlberg performance? I can't think of anything where I'm more...
Departed's really
good. He's really
good
in Departed.
Yeah, oh, that's
he's
true.
Really good.
That's true.
When he's talking to, like, just sassed everybody in that movie. And he's got a great payoff in that movie.
He was good in Rockstar, too.
Oh, yeah, that's a movie that gets shit on.
Yeah,
it.
And
I know
you've said that's one of your favorite, like, underrated films.
Yeah.
Love that movie. That's because that's, like, an era that, like, isn't... a lot of films haven't been made of that music era. That's almost in your wheelhouse of... Right?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, the other, you know, part of it is that, you know, in Rockstar and Departed, I agree with you with Departed, too. This, I mean, he's the, you know, he kind of carries the film, even though it's an ensemble cast, he's the main character.
Yeah, it's like him and Burt Reynolds, or, yeah.
You know, and he's not, you know, especially at this time, he was coming right out of Marky Mark. So
yeah, and Calvin Klein ads.
Yeah, and so we coming into this, and it's just like, you know,
I mean, it definitely helps that he had a director like P.T. Anderson, but mm-hmm. by all means, it shows
still,
you with...
Like you said, a 27-year-old P.T. Anderson.
Yeah, which, okay, so going from, like, age on topic, and we're talking about, like, the leads, because it definitely is. It's Mark Wahlberg, Burt Reynolds. Burt Reynolds was a schmuck. I don't know if you guys know this. He was, a schmuck on this movie. He hit, like, P.T. Anderson.
Really?
Also, yeah. Like, he would just, like, call P.T. Anderson a punk and didn't, like, know, you know, said he didn't know what he was talking about. And he even, like, turned down the role several times.
Yeah, and anything that you've seen since the film, it's like he just he shits on the movie.
Oh, wow.
Oh, he totally does. And
I
it's
didn't
like
know that.
It's like, do you realize, I mean... Not for nothing. We're smoking the bandit, all right? It's like,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
Like,
it's
really?
And during that time period, you know, I know Burt Reynolds, he has a history and he's done a lot of stuff and all. But during that, it was kind of like how Tarantino brought Travolta back.
Yeah.
I mean, Burt Reynolds wasn't doing much at that point. And it's like, and then he got this role and he got the Golden Globe and, you know.
Yeah,
and,
nominated for an Oscar as well.
Yeah. And
wow, that's disappointing.
And
like,
he just,
I love him in this role.
Oh, yeah. he's totally, you see interviews, he's just, ever since then, he's like, he really, you know, wants nothing to do with this film, which is pretty amazing. Cause,
stupid.
Yeah, he was, he called him a punk, he had a fight with him and Tom Jane, like, he's literally just throwing punches, like, at everybody and thought, and was just, like, a complete nightmare, and even after that, like, P.T. Anderson still offered him a role, I don't know exactly what role, but a role in his next film, Magnolia, but then they decided to part ways and not, and this
probably
was also, like, he was turned, like, he told him to fuck off, and, like, P.T. Anderson was like after Burt Reynolds for this role, and he turned it down several times. And he said, if you do this role, you are going to get a nomination. He was right. Like, he, I mean, because, I mean, hey, separate the person from the artwork.
He did a great job in the film. Yeah, I mean, he's great in the film. Yeah. He really is. He's that fatherly figure, and, he, you know, and he's the glue that keeps all these, you know, misfits together and everything in the film.
Yeah, he makes,
definitely.
Like, yeah, but, I mean, all of these actors, like, they play kind of not that great of people, you know, like, they're, you know, if you met them in the, in your real life, I don't know if I'd be close or whatever. Or,
no,
but,
and
like, they,
some,
they
of,
make
some
these,
of them aren't, like, bad.
Not
but,
bad,
but they're definitely not too intelligent.
Sure.
Which I kind of like.
Yeah, it's like a film of, like, not too, like, I mean, it's not like they're all in the same playing
It doesn't
field.
Make idiots feel like idiots.
Uh-huh.
And it's really easy to make a movie about, like, beautiful minds, smart people, you know?
Sure.
So, like, I'm gushing over these characters. So you mentioned Don Cheadle before.
Yeah, so, yeah, so the, Julianne Moore, John C. Reilly coming back from Hard Eight, Heather Graham, William H. Macy, Luis Guzman, obviously Philip Seymour Hoffman, Philip Baker Hall, Hard Eight, Tom Jane, Alfred Molina, Robert Ridgely, Nicole Ari Parker, and Melora Walters. And I just say those last two just because they, you know, they're part of the big ensemble, and Melora Walters he works with again in Magnolia.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, just like
I think
I
she's
mean,
really
talk
good
about
too,
that ensemble, yeah. And they all nailed it. It's awesome.
On a side note, you mentioned it, I didn't know the Gwyneth Paltrow thing.
Yeah.
Thank God he chose Heather Graham. Cause
yes,
she was.
Yeah, we
fantastic.
Can talk about this as a movie
yeah.
about yeah she, Heather Graham.
She was fantastic.
Her
as
first day, of, her first day of shooting was her nude scene. That
yeah,
was, so that's a, what a.
Had she done
out.
Anything before this of significance?
Not that I know of.
Mm, that's interesting.
Yeah, no, that. I'm not sure.
No, this is a standout role.
Okay, I'll come clean. That's why I went to see it three times. When, when she takes off the little sundress and, you know, and
yeah.
tests out Mark Wahlberg. That's
yeah, no, yeah. She, and she, but she, yeah, she's awesome in this film too. She's drop dead gorgeous woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But besides that, she gives everyone in this movie gives a great performance. Like, this was definitely one of the first movies I think I saw Julianne Moore in, and she's definitely up going to be recognized, if not already recognized, as one of the more talented actresses out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's one of these things like chicken and egg thing. Like, mm-hmm. do you think he just had a good eye? Because a lot of these people weren't his first choices.
I mean, no, I like... I think he does have a good eye, you know, P.T. Anderson. I mean, I'm sure that obviously there's a casting director involved, and it's not like he's calling
course,
up every
course.
Single one of these people or whatever. But,
not all
but he was
Burt
going
treatment.
After, like, the Burt Reynolds, like, you know, he went after that. And then he had the confidence to go with a, you know, like a nobody in the acting world like Mark Wahlberg, and then loved Philip Seymour Hoffman. That's why he put him in Hard Eight. Loved John C. Reilly from Hard Eight. And,
well, at the time, I mean, the only big name was the Burt Reynolds. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I'm sure, you know, like Julianne Moore had a lot of credits to her name before this, but she was, you didn't go see a movie with Julianne Moore over the title or anything like that.
This
Burt
was
Reynolds
a big,
is the only one.
Yeah, this was a big year for her because the same year Lost World Jurassic Park came out, and that was mm-hmm. she's in that movie. Yeah.
I mean, that's a nice perspective because the first time I saw this film, I knew most of the cast.
Yeah.
So I could imagine it was pretty cool. Going there and seeing
yeah.
all these unknowns
well,
doing great jobs.
Well, I mean, I saw this, and, you know, I've had conversations with Kyle about this, but this, I was in college when this came out, and I was studying film, and, what was it, 97, so I was a junior, and so I, you know, at that time, I was like, I was a sponge, you know, and it's like, I didn't, like I said, I didn't go see films like Twister, Independence Day, and you know what the big films during that time period. I wasn't interested in that. I was interested in more personal stories, and you know, the '90s were pretty big for independent cinema and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, not that this is like a small indie film or by any means, but P.T. Anderson at the time and a lot of these actors were unknown commodities. So it was like. And, you know, and the story, okay, it's also like a history lesson about the, you know, about the adult industry too, which to me, like, was another interesting aspect of it because it was like, you saw how, you know, that's how it was in the '70s. Like they made those films, on film. They were actually trying to make films. And then if you watch, you know, it's like now it's even, you know, it's really, that industry is gone by the way of now where, you know, it's on your laptop, you click on a website and it's like, there's no story. It's just boom. It's like, and that's,
hey, there's a lot to be said about instant gratification.
There's nothing wrong with it. I'm just saying, but from Burt Reynolds' perspective, that's part of his arc, is the fact that he is a real filmmaker. And he sees the art in it, and it's like, and he's trying to make real films. That's,
yeah.
You know.
Well, and that's really strong in that one scene with, you know, because you've got the Philip Baker Hall character, the mm-hmm. What's his name? Like something Gondolini or something like, oh, Floyd Gondolini, which is referenced to in Hard Eight, actually, when him and Samuel Jackson, Philip Baker Hall's character in that movie, and Sam Jackson are talking, and Sam Jackson mentions Floyd Gondolini.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, right. In this movie, Philip Baker Hall plays Floyd Gondolini, and he's shooting on VHS and shooting with quote-unquote real people, the youngsters of, like, today, and there's that great exchange between him and Burt Reynolds, and he's like, the future is videotape, like, not film, and Jack is just like, I'm a filmmaker. And I just love that because it was very meta in a way.
Right, and then there's a scene even after that where they're looking at the dailies,
mm-hmm.
and and he comes up. And,
like, the DP/editor,
when they,
right?
Yeah, when they looked at the dailies when they were making the Dirk Diggler film, and he was like, "This is a real film." That's what the guy says. This is a real film, Jack. You know. And then later on, when it's during the downturn in the film,
with the big fake tits.
It's the two girls in a hot tub, and like real plastic looking women, and they're shot on videotape, and he's like, "How'd it come out?" And he's like, "He goes, it is what it is." You know, it's like that's. And basically, it's making a statement of that industry, too, that it actually did start out as an art form and turned into the instant gratification, you know, aspect of it.
Yeah, definitely. And continuing from, like, that, like, meta level of P.T. Anderson and his love for film, he's never shot anything on, like, digital. I don't even think, like, his music videos, I think they're all shot on film, too. So, I mean, this is a guy that recently he's also been able to get his hands on these beautiful large format cameras, like The Master and Inherent Vice, were shot on like 70mm, and you just get these beautiful big images. And he's a big, because he loves filmmakers again, like
he's in the
Martin Scorsese
school. Exactly.
And so him, Tarantino, they're just big. When I say film lovers, I mean like the tangible film.
Yeah,
and they
literally
want to keep
film.
And they want to keep that going, which it is kind of coming back, just like vinyl's coming back. There's an appreciation for it now. Like the Star Wars is being shot on film as well, and that's just awesome to me.
When did they start transitioning?
Star Wars is better than Lord of the Rings. Different podcast episode to talk to Zach about. He's a big Lord of the Rings.
That's more of a podcast battle.
Podcast battles. When did they start transitioning to digital?
You might have a better idea.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, the first.
Lucas with the.
The first fully digital film was Episode 3. So it's kind of ironic that they're going back to.
Well, I can say that my film, 1998, we shot Rhymes and Reason.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's got to be one of the first feature length, digitally shot films because we shot that on DV. So
that's cool.
That's kind of cool. You need to put that on. Do you have an IMDb page for that, right?
Yeah.
Trivia section.
There you go. Around that time too, like 98, 99, there was a Central Station or Grand Central Station. There was a film called. I remember that came out in digital, but yeah, like early 2000. I don't know when The Phantom Menace came out, but around that time 99. Is when they really started to make that transition.
Yeah, because I mean, you started obviously also with the digital effects, so a lot more was computer, so it just made sense.
Was like a catalyst for the actual theaters to start going digital.
Yeah.
So.
Do you think P.T. Anderson was aware of this at the time, or is it just like one of those happy foreshadowing things?
I think he probably
because
had
he's kind of like Jack, like you said, like sticking with the film.
Yeah. I mean, at that time, I'm sure people. Yeah. People in the industry saw it probably turning that way.
Yeah.
At least with the like blockbusters and stuff. But.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like if. It would be like it's like a direct statement that he's making, like.
I mean, it was like, always known that film costs money. They say that in the film,
right? But I think knowing who he is and stuff like that, that was probably, you know, an underlying message that he was You know,
yeah, it's pretty cool.
How I have nightmares of disapproval from my parents. He probably had nightmares of stuff becoming video and digital.
That's yeah, fair. That's
no,
fair.
And because he's definitely making the statement of the adult industry did start out at, you know, I mean, I guess even earlier than that, it was like stag reels and stuff like that. That wasn't, but then it turned. They realized that it was film, and they made, you know, I don't know if you ever seen an adult film, like from the 70s or like. The film, film.
I've now seen like digitized versions of that.
Okay, because I'm just saying, I'm not saying on film, but I'm just saying like they, you know, it's like if you were going for the gratification, you had to use the fast forward button, you know.
And yeah.
That's just the bottom line because there were stories. There was, you know.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times bad acting going on, but they were in sure. Like,
which they definitely some good actors do some bad, amazing bad acting in like the little times that we see mm-hmm. in a few productions.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure.
It's just, they nail it. But before we jump into some real things, I just want to read a couple of the actors that were up for some other roles as well. You had, Samuel L. Jackson was offered Buck Swope, but I definitely prefer Don Cheadle as Buck instead of Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, I think Don Cheadle has more of a vulnerability.
Yeah. And then these were all the people mm-hmm. that, I mean, again, we love, you know, we've agreed that we love Burt Reynolds as Jack, but these were the other actors up for that. Warren Beatty, Sidney Pollack, Albert Brooks, Harvey Keitel, Bill Murray, and Jack Nicholson.
Hmm.
Those are some great actors there.
Great actors, but for the role?
Just that, that's my Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, I mean, you would get, I mean, Jack Nicholson's too much of a character.
Yeah.
For that, I can't see
Albert
that.
Brooks might have been good.
Yeah.
I can see that.
I don't think he has the gravitas, though, that Burt Reynolds had. Like as you mentioned, Zach, he was the only known person at the time in this film.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think you kind of need that because he's like the, for like, you know, he's like the Rock kind of.
He was also, I guess it works because he was also like a sex icon at one point. So it just,
yeah,
in that
no,
realm
no,
too,
and that's
like,
part of it. That's definitely yeah. part of it, especially yeah. I would imagine at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Usually we break down like these movies scene by scene. Even while I was watching and realized there was no way we
no
could
way.
Do that. We'd
yeah.
be here for 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah.
I mean, again, you guys, if you haven't seen Boogie Nights, you're a fool. Just
yes.
just watch it. I do want to say, though, that I love this opening.
Yes, that's just like, there's definitely some key scenes that I want to talk about besides, like, three scenes with Philip Seymour Hoffman that I love and that we'll play clips from. But the opening of the scene, 3 minute, like, opening shot.
It's, I mean, that's P.T. Anderson saying, I love Scorsese.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's so Goodfellas, that the opening scene, and it's
awesome. Yeah,
beautiful.
No, it's very, that's a good point. That's
and,
very,
I mean, he would admit it, it's not like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, that's, it's not even like, you know, I'm not being critical of it, it's amazing, it's, you know.
No, but something like, I mean, I do love Tarantino, but I think I said this in another episode that I like, you know, P.T. Anderson's career more than, like all of his film catalog versus Tarantino, but Tarantino definitely like does a shot by shot of like people that he loves, which again, he'll admit to that.
Mm-hmm.
But P.T. Anderson is definitely somebody that takes the style. So from your Scorsese's to your he just passed away recently. I said director of Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, Jonathan Demme.
Yeah, Jonathan Demme with his like close-ups. Like he'll take the styles of those directors and honor them versus, you know, like Inglourious Basterds. Like a lot of the shots from that are like, you know, and again, he'll fully admit it, but they're like shot-by-shot replicas from some of his favorite films.
Mm-hmm. And just from like, just I love when we follow Ruler Girl.
Yeah.
Just like the wheels and like how we're moving with the wheels. Mm-hmm. It's just like, it's just awesome.
Yeah, they do two, like, twice in the movie, at least. I mean, there's a decent amount of long shots, but I love both. Like, this is like to the club, which is a location we go to many times. There's not many locations
no,
in this film.
That's true.
So it's like the club, which Luis Guzman is fantastic
in
this movie.
That, I mean, we didn't, you know, go into the character, and he's a very small character, but after this film, I was like, I love that dude.
Yeah,
man. I want to see him in more. Come on, Jack, put me in a film.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he gets his chance,
well,
and he's like,
just the sexiest woman.
You know, I'm a big Luis Guzman guy.
Yeah. Even in like, he's in silly movies, like what's the Waiting?
Oh, Waiting.
Yeah.
Just, I don't care. Whatever he does, I'm happy with.
What's the line he says in that movie? I know you like saying it.
It's like your prime rib.
Yeah, I mean, you meet every single major character in that scene except for probably like the Colonel,
Tom Jane, you know.
Yeah, and Tom Jane, but everyone else, and that's the whole thing. Like, this movie just goes from there, and then you have Jack's house, so you meet that location. You see Bucky at work. You meet William H. Macy, and he goes home, and his wife, who's played by
Nina Hartley, a 70s porn star.
Yeah, so Nina Hartley actually gave gifts to the cast, and they were copies of her porn films.
Really?
Yeah. So
that's awesome. How old was she when she did this then?
I'd say late 40s if I was going to guess at that point. It's 97 and she
still looks good. I mean,
yeah. No, I mean, she's got some great, there's just some really great, just like awkward, like tense, but then also like dramatic, but a lot of funny parts too. Like,
oh, I mean, this is a hilarious movie.
Yeah, it's got some, like, just, I mean, when they're at the
recording studio, it's
oh God, yeah, no, I love that scene.
But then on the other side of it, the tension and like,
and the low moments of this movie.
Yeah. Oh God! Oh, like in the parking lot, and and of course the firecracker scene. But it's,
yeah, the parking lot, the donut shop, the limousine, and that's all connected and everything like that. And then Rahad's house. Well, that's even funny. Kind of,
mm-hmm. We haven't even just like mentioned how great the soundtrack is.
Yes, this is yet again. I know we said this early on. This is a movie that it uses a song name. But they can't use the song.
Heatwave is the band.
Heatwave. And yeah, so the lead guy was like a born again Christian.
Oh really?
Yeah.
I knew he did.
Born again Christian.
Porn.
Done exactly. Right. I mean, you know, you find out sometimes those guys are.
But still, more than makes up for it with this great soundtrack.
Oh yeah, like I mean, just the songs alone.
And before I forget, a lot of summaries say that this is like a 70s film, and that's bullshit, because this is just as much as like an 80s film.
Yeah, I think
the 70s
included,
is like the high point, and then like the 80s is just like the decline.
Well, still, the 80s strikes, and that's when Macy kills himself.
Oh my God, yeah, spoiler, but not, who cares? Again,
yeah,
maybe
if you haven't seen it, come
this,
on,
yeah.
It's 20 years ago. So.
Yeah, and so William H. Macy finds his wife three times, and the third time, like, I mean, that we see.
And when I was, you know, going back and watching scenes from the film, that was one of the things. And I was reading. I watched it on YouTube, and I was reading the comments. And someone, there's three gunshots. So she could have been with multiple partners at that time.
Oh wow! Ooh. I didn't even catch that.
Yeah, there's three guns. Someone mentioned it. I thought that was kind of interesting. It was like, you know, we always see, every time he runs into her, she's with another guy or whatever. And it's like at the, you know, let's. Pushed him over the edge. This was enough, you know. And there's the three gunshots. I don't know if he shot her three times or, but it was kind of interesting.
The first time he runs, like, goes into the room, like he just hears it down the hallway and walks in, like, in their own house.
Mm-hmm.
And she says to him, like, you know, like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you know. And then the guy she's with says, "Will you close the door?"
Yeah. Another interesting thing, when he goes out to the car to get the gun.
Yeah.
Scotty J still in the at the steering wheel.
Oh,
I didn't notice
that.
And there's also this is just because it's a very important scene. It's, you know, they're celebrating New Year's, transition from 79
to 80.
Goodbye, goodbye 70s, hello 80s.
And hello, and the video world. That's what I'm saying. It all play. Even the storyline has an arc like that because it's you know, the time period plays a part in the whole you know, in the story, because the 70s, it was kind of, that was like,
yeah, 70s.
That was like the golden age of
a lot of
cinema
things,
they were making films, and then the 80s came, videotape, and, you know, okay, just get in and do it, you know, no storyline. It's, we're not filmmakers anymore, we're just, you know, producing, you know.
I love it. He blows his brains out, and then it just goes to a black screen, just with, I was just like, you know, I'm writing notes along while I'm watching the movie, and I put the 80s, and I was even corrected by watching the film. It just says 80s in like small little white font, and it's just like,
it's great.
Oh, it like almost makes you like squint. I mean, I'm sure if you're watching on a big screen, but I've unfortunately only seen it on like TVs, the film, but it just like almost makes you just like tense and like just be like, oh God, fucking 80s.
Are there any other earlier scenes you wanted to talk before we get into Scotty J's introduction?
I mean, that's the next, like, one of my, like, my next, like, favorite scene, and that has that.
I mean, you mentioned the mom. I thought he was great with the mom, Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, I mean, you've got that. You've got.
And he's Eddie at this point.
You get Roller Girl at the school, and that guy is making the gestures to give, you know, for her to give him a blowjob. He comes back later on, and it's just really good, like, character. You know, like, you see all these characters at the club, and then you kind of get, like, the solo. You get Julianne Moore on the phone at after the club, like, trying to call and talk to the kids. So, you know, that's going on. It's just really great, like, simple, quick. You know, and this all happens within, like, the first, like, 5 minutes.
Simple and quick, but it draws you into the characters.
Yes.
Like, all of the characters.
Yeah, you become invested within definitely the first 15 minutes of this movie, easily, for a film that lasts over 2.5 hours.
Mm-hmm. You get so many things coming at you, but it doesn't feel like it.
Phrasing.
Literally.
Phrasing.
Yeah. But it doesn't feel like it, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I'm
you don't feel lost. Like, there are films that try to do too much, and it's like, and you get lost, and you're like, what the hell's going on? Who are they talking about? You know, like.
And then what do you do? You just, like, stop investing when that happens, when you see a film like that. This is just, you're, like, plugged in.
Yeah, well, it's just, again, it's just very fluid, and there's compelling just from their acting. It's not even like there's, like, a lot of dialogue, per se. It's not like a Tarantino, like, banter or whatever, and you just, like, when we get to Jack's house, that it's just him and Julianne Moore, and she goes on the phone, he just goes and he makes himself a drink, and we just kind of see both of their, she does a line and then does a call, so we see, like, their vices, and then we see Roller Girl in school, we see Buck at the stereo store, and then and we see Eddie with his relationship with his parents, and even that one woman saying, you know, like, you know, you're a star. Oh, she says your cock is so beautiful.
Oh, yeah, the girl that
is
sleeping with, yeah.
And I love, and then this is just a great theme that's presented right away via, like, via Eddie and just his dialogue saying everyone is given one special thing, right?
Yeah, I wrote that down too, because that's the way he delivers that too is awesome.
Yeah, he's just, like, standing up and he's so childish, he's jumping up and down on the bed, you know, but he just has, I mean, it's just a great thematic line that's, you know, call, I mean, if you want to, I don't know what you want to call it, exposition or something like that, but I don't think it is. I think it's just, like, the vulnerability and a big message of this movie. And then, I mean, after that, you know, we get Jackie eyes Eddie again and invites him, and he has that great scene with Heather Graham that we mentioned already.
She gets naked so fast. Like,
well, it's that easy one piece with no underwear on, so yeah, it's just like wham bam, thank you, man.
Wow.
And I believe back then that was called a beaver. Leave it at that.
How you think she did that in one take, or just, like, she's just so good at it?
I don't know, but I mean, then, you know, I love her. Are you going to take the roller skates off? No. Why? And then after that, I mean, then he has the fight, and then he comes, and Jack, no, again, phrasing, but Jack is having, like, a little, I guess, you know, probably, imagine, like, every, like, weekend or something like that, or random times, he just has these awesome pool parties, and this is when we get to really meet John C. Reilly.
I think Anchorman kind of takes from this and that pool party.
Oh, that's a good point.
Not
yes.
like the
and
whole,
the,
like,
well,
oh, I'm the Bryman.
Number 170s, and yeah, then just, but, yeah.
You know, and then, like, because we do get all the proper introductions. Like, we saw them before, but then he's being introduced.
Yeah. And so, I mean, this, so before we get, I'm going to mention my second favorite character, like I said, and it's Robert Wrigley's the Colonel, and he's the financier, right, of these films of Jack's. And he just has this great, because he is important, because then his driver is who has the interaction with Phil Zimmerman, and he comes in, Scotty J. But he comes and he's got his chauffeur Johnny, and then he's got a young, like, woman with him that asked Jack if you know, if there's any coke at this party. But I just love, this was just, and this is very, like, taking from Scorsese's, well, the editing in this film, right? When the Colonel steps out, and it's like a really weird cut, like.
Thank you, Johnny. My dear, it's party time. Oh, you look lovely.
Like him, like, coming out of a limo or whatever. It's just every. He just has this great presence, that actor. He's like a bigger, older guy, sunglasses.
Yeah, those
and
big
just,
glasses.
Yeah.
I love the glasses.
Yeah. And when he meets Eddie, he's just like, can I see your cock? Or I hear you have a great giant cock. May I see it?
I'm looking forward to seeing you in action. Jack says you've got a great big cock.
Well, I don't know. I guess so.
May I see it?
Really?
Please.
It's just, like, so awkward, but it makes me, I was, you know, like, 16, 17 when I saw this film, and, you know, definitely one of the more, no pun intended, like, adult films that I had seen, like, at that age, and it's so awkward, and I just remember, like, watching it, like, in my room and just, like, constantly going up and down with, like, the room, like, the volume on the remote. Because I, like, thought my parents were going to be, like, thinking I was, like, listening to porn at some points or just even the dialogue. And it was just, but at the same time, I'm just, like, giggling and laughing the whole time because it's, this movie's incredibly funny.
I love the Colonel's face when he sees the cock.
Yeah, and they just, like, stay on him. He's just got this, like head tilted, like, Big Bird look.
Because he's all about business, but he's a little surprised. And
yeah.
He's like,
well, he's got his vices,
which we find out later in the film. Yeah.
The other character, just like, because I want to bring up too, is Reed, John C. Reilly's character. Yeah. Just as like his like one-upsmanship with Scotty. Mm-hmm. They have a relationship of two like 7-year-old brothers.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Which I mean, definitely like later on. Like in Step Brothers, a John C. Reilly role, it's like almost flipped to that too, like a different realm.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's just, I love it. He's like, some people told me I look like, you know, like Han Solo, like, and the margarita machine, and just like, oh, do you work out at blah blah blah? It's like, oh no, I would have seen you there. I go there every day. And Marky Mark is so innocent. I'm sorry, Mark Wahlberg is so innocent. He's just like, I'd like to work out there.
Well, I think they could. I mean, you said the perfect word, and when you said why Don Cheadle was, like, these characters are all vulnerable because it's like their minds are like childlike.
Yeah,
you know, and it's not poking fun at that. It's just that's who they are, and it's like they're uneducated, and you know, it's just like they're in that world, but they're real people, they're genuine people, and you do care for them.
I feel like a lot of people that probably get into the adult industry are like, you know, they get in at a young age and they're very impressionable,
right?
Like, you know, you're on it because, well, we can find anyone from the adult. You know. Were you ever in an adult film set?
Well, I mean, yeah,
no comment.
No comment. If there were cell phones with videos back then.
www.
Well, if you want to plug your adult film website at the end, we'll give you.
Yeah, we do plugs at the end.
Whoa.
Phrasing.
Please, watch that. Phrasing.
So it's that kind of show, huh?
Yeah, but so okay, let's get to it.
40 minutes in.
Exactly. We're 40 into
no,
our podcast
and the film as
oh,
well.
Oh wow, that's pretty apropos. 40 minutes into the podcast and 40 minutes into the film, we enter Scotty J. So that girl that comes with the Colonel ends up ODing. Great interaction with that guy and the whole like, you think you should get some new shit, you know, with the coke and everything. Takes Johnny does a very Godfather slap to the guy, you know, like you know, like, and they're carrying the girl out, and in walks Scotty J, and like, oh my god, is she okay? Fuck off. And he's told to fuck off right away. And then he comes in, and again, I know they do in The Departed, but I think they do this in another Scorsese film. Do you know what would you call that?
Yeah,
the circling
in.
Oh,
god. Now you put me on the spot now.
Yeah, come on, my mentor. I don't know it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, yeah, because he does it in Life Lessons.
Yeah. So whatever you want to call that, it's the, you know, all of a sudden the screen just shrinks into a small, you know, vignette-like circle, and it's totally Scotty J eyeing down Eddie Adams.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing, because here comes a character we haven't seen yet.
Yeah.
And boom, we're in his point of view.
Yeah.
It's like, they bring you into Scotty J. It's like you said, 40 minutes into the film, here's a new character, and boom, he's going to be part of our, you know, like, our consciousness.
Definitely one of the more emotional scenes of the movie is with Scotty J. And I'd also like to point out that it's been said many times that I love this film, and I specifically chose to end every episode, and I said to you, we decided to end the show with "You Sexy Thing," and that's the entrance song for him in this movie. And I just love it, because he walks in and zones in on Dirk. He's got the short shorts, the tank top that's too small.
Yeah, and I know I've mentioned this a lot, but this is particularly one of his few interviews. I think it was on NPR's Fresh Take, where he said, again, he chose that costume.
Awesome. Yeah.
And they gave him a shirt, and it was a size small.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, I want a kid size.
That's awesome. I love that.
Because he something about, like, wanting to feel that.
Yeah, and I love the accent that he comes with. California. Like, it's just, like, it's almost, you know, like, I know on SNL they did a sketch called The Californians, and it's just definitely this, like, yeah, whatever. Whatever's cool.
Yeah, is the car cool?
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, what
did you want to play this clip? Or?
Yeah, let's go ahead and play it.
Get out of my way. All right, you all right? Shut the fuck up.
Hey, Reed.
Hey, Johnny J, how are
ya? You know. Who's this?
Eddie, this is Scotty J. He's a friend. He works on some of the films.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, me too. Are you going to be working, or?
Maybe.
Oh,
probably.
That's great. That's great. Because how'd you meet Jack? Because I work on the films, you know, sometimes. So if you ever, yeah.
Hey, Eddie. Come here a second, will you?
That's important.
Could you excuse me for a minute?
Yeah. Oh,
very nice to meet you.
Take care.
Yeah.
I just love it because it's just awkward, and then we know the mindset of this guy and what he wants, and he's just doing this awkward flirting and getting to know Eddie, and then Eddie has to walk over and go be introduced to the colonel. And I'm just everything about Scotty J right from the get-go. I don't know, I relate to him, maybe not his sexual preference.
No,
maybe not.
He's an outsider.
Yeah.
He's part of this family, but he's an outsider to the family. Mm-hmm. You know, that's right away, fuck off, you know. Like, he's not in the movies. He's not one of the actors. He's not a filmmaker. I mean,
he's a boomer operator slash.
I'm diss the audio people right now.
Yeah, which he's kind of like. It just seems like he's just like a gopher, like on the film set.
Yeah,
like, you know, just
exactly.
Step in.
And so he's an outsider in this crew, and he's awkward, and you know, so he doesn't.
Everything about him just screams awkward.
And you can't downplay the gay thing, especially back then. This isn't like. A time where that's necessarily accepted, especially in like a hyper macho, porn set.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of tormenting himself, I feel like, by constantly being around, you know, like male, female sex, like all the time, if you really think about it that way. Like, he's just putting himself through this purgatory of some sorts, and he just wants this nice little moment with Eddie.
Oh, the close-up, I mean, I'm jumping ahead a little bit.
No, that's, yeah.
The Julianne Moore scene, Eddie's first scene.
Yeah.
Dirk Diggler's
yeah, which
first
is exactly
scene,
the next scene.
Yeah.
Where he's holding the boom, and he's like...
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like quivering in like a very like...
Oh my God, you just feel
he does
it, right?
He does the turn
me.
The head
yeah,
to the side.
Everyone kind of does that. We even get a great shot of the lens and it widening, you know?
Yeah.
To, like, because, and I just find that funny because they're just saying, you know, this whole time, like earlier we see Eddie talking to himself in the mirror and you see the shape of his manhood. And, I mean, I've said cock already. See the shape of his cock. And that's the whole thing. He's supposed to be like this, like, Ron Jeremy level of, like, you know, male gifted person.
John Holmes, I mean.
Oh, John, yeah, that's actually, that's the very, yeah. Well, I think it was Burt Reynolds or P.T. No, P.T. Anderson spent a couple of days with
Ron Jeremy.
Oh,
really?
Yeah, some research of this film. I mean, the big thing with, like, P.T. Anderson grew up in the Valley, and he was, like, went like his dad was in the entertainment industry, and he said he'd like show up to some houses where it was definitely like they just shot porn there, or like it was a party just like this one. So this was yet another, again, like Hard Eight he took from his little gambling experience, and then this film he took from his like childhood, and that was the Valley, like California famous like Valley experience.
That's cool. Yeah. So in this scene,
Last important thing. After the party scene, they're in the hot tub, and this is where...
Oh, yeah, I was going to call
he becomes He becomes Dirk Diggler.
Yeah, so we get the birth of Dirk Diggler in the hot tub, but it's not really the birth, right? It's just like he names himself
it's a,
and the shining
it's a
lights.
Christening in the water.
And then...
The Christ.
And then, boom, like, you really, with Julianne Moore, see this, like, scene in action. And I like how she says, like, what did she say? Finish on my, like, tits or something?
Yeah.
Or, like, her stomach or something? And then... Like, she seems like she's enjoying, like, legitimately enjoying the sex, right?
When he's on top of her, she says, yeah, in the heat of the moment. Inside me. Yeah.
Yeah, finish inside me. It's like, what?
And again, to, like, we get the payoff, if you want to call it that, at the end of the film. But this whole time, it's just teased of, you know, the size of Dirk's cock. And another thing, that, like, in this moment, he's, like, says to his DP, and the DP's like, oh, we'll go to, like, stock footage. He's like, no, nothing's going to, like, compare to that or whatever. And right away, Dirk is just like, you know, like, oh, you want me to go again, Jack? I'll go again. Yeah. But this is another great scene that I want to play a little clip of Philip Seymour Hoffman, because you get Scotty J, who, like, goes. So, you know, he's, like, the boom operator, but they send him to go get Dirk from the, you know, green room,
yeah,
the dressing
with the clipboard.
Room. Yeah. And he's just like, oh, you look really sexy. I'm going to play the clip. Yeah. I can't do it justice.
Hey, you look really good. And you look really sexy. I like your name a lot. It's really cool.
Yeah, like, I like your name a lot. It's really cool.
Yeah. And with the pen. Like,
yeah, so yeah, really phallic, yeah. Just like with the pen in his mouth. And again, like his face while holding he's holding a boom. Mm-hmm. He's quivering. Like, it just, you know, I mean, everyone's face, and the film runs out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dirk, I can go again. It's just a great, you know, getting goosebumps.
No, it's wonderful. It's
oh, it's wonderful.
Your goosebumps.
Yeah. Oh, it's my goosebumps.
Yeah. No. It's really great. And after this, you just get that whole, like,
montage.
But yeah. It's not like a silly montage. It's like a nice little.
It's showing
progression.
Ramp up.
Yeah, progression of time, because it's like total, like, disco. I mean, I love it. They're buying similar, him and Reed, John C. Reilly's character.
And Scotty.
And
right?
Scott, and again, his shirt's
and
like.
And he's tagging along.
Yeah, he's
tagging Scotty
on,
has
yeah.
joined the gang.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he has, like, marginal acceptance, but it's, like, acceptance.
And in a way, it's Dirk Diggler that actually brings Scotty, because he was an outsider, and then he brings him in, and it's like, he's like, kind of more part of the crew when Dirk's there.
That's true.
No, I relate to this character immensely, just because...
Scotty,
like,
J.
Yeah, because, and then in the outsider aspect, because going to where we went to high school, I was from a different town, and then, like, all my friends I made from Old Japan, the town you're from, or grew up in, and I just remember being on, like, AIM back in the day over the summer, like, oh, what are you guys up to? And it's just like, I need to get, like, the invite, like, in and just, like, tag along. And, you know, that's what you said, like, Scotty J's.
And, like, I'm not saying you here, but for Scotty, like, you can only imagine this just enhances his crush.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Just, like, probably in the changing room with Dirk. And
yeah, which builds up to the New Year's that we've talked about. You know?
Yeah, and I mean, and after this, so we get this, you know, we see them making Brock Landers. We also get to a second annual Adult Film Awards, because after that he won, like, a bunch. Yeah, he won a bunch. It was at the second annual.
Yeah, he won a bunch then. And then he's kind of, like, humble at that one.
Yeah, and we see Dirk's new place, his Corvette, Jack saying that line of, this is the film I want to be remembered for,
mm-hmm.
and then we get a jump in time, because the film starts in 77, and then we get the, you know, the New Year's Eve party.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the one character, Becky, meets Jerome.
And it's the New Year's Eve to 1980.
To 1980, right? Yeah. And this is where we meet Phil Baker Hall's character.
I like Don Cheadle's Rick James wig.
Oh, my God, how good. That's like his, he's just a character that's constantly, so first he's got the cowboy look, and he gets shit from, like, the stereo.
Yeah, he works
owner,
at a stereo
and
place.
At the club.
But, and I keep dwelling on the storylines of how they're all outsiders. They're all Scotty J.
Yeah.
But when they all together, that they're accepted, and they're like the family. And then
family.
Then after that, when during the down period, they're all separated again.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? If you look at the film's arc that way, that's another good, like, brilliant filmmaking method that.
Yeah.
P.T. Anderson did, is that, you know, we single out Scotty J as the outsider, but really look at all the characters. I was thinking about it. All the characters are outsiders,
mm-hmm.
you know, Bucky can't, he's, you know, oh, I only keep you around to bring the chicks in. That's what his boss tells him. You
know, Reed, like, even says, like, I know, like, this isn't going to last forever. He's into magic.
Yeah, he does.
Like, they're all.
Julianne Moore with her kids.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. They're, her kid.
They're all outsiders in regular society, but then it's like this family aspect when they're all together.
Yeah, family of misfits.
And once Turk comes in, Scotty J gets. It seems like he gets accepted into that family, you know?
Well, this is something I want, actually, I took a note of, like, right in the beginning. So, before you get that, going all the way back to the opening of this film, and you get that great opening of the shot, you know, Boogie Nights and going down and everything like that, there's this circus-type music. Mm-hmm. And for some reason this time, you know, because, I mean, I'm looking for stuff to talk about on the podcast, it just, like, I thought about it that much more. And to me, this is kind of like a circus, and you just, like, it's almost like the, you know, like at the circus, there's a lot of awkward things going on, like a bunch of clowns coming out of a car that's mm-hmm. too small, and it just has that very circusy, crazy mm-hmm. circus like vibe. You know, they're putting on a show,
yeah.
But you don't know their real personalities cool. until they're, you know, like behind the scenes. So I just thought that was
no, that's the,
yeah, that's cool.
I noticed that too.
So yeah, I mean, we get the 80s party. And then we get the comment of the videotape is the future, not film, etc. And then we get Scotty. We meet Tom Jane. We meet, what's his character's name?
He's a dancer, right?
Yeah, I love it.
At a male club.
Yeah.
At a
male club.
Yeah. I didn't. Oh, I guess that slipped me. I don't know if that made sense. But yeah, but Todd Parker, his character.
Todd Parker.
I love it, like, because it's just, you know, so again, it's like adult, you know, entertainment in a way. He's a male stripper at a male club or whatever. Mm-hmm. He's got that great stash. But I just love it that, like, he, you know, still hangs out with these other adult entertainers. I'm just imagining maybe he's not gifted down below, so he can't be in these films.
Could be the reason, you know. Could I feel like reason. He might have slid his way in. No. I don't want to say it like that, but geez, it's hard to escape
hard to?
These.
Oh, God.
Anything I say. But then, yes.
Yeah, so Reed introduces him to Dirk, and then Scotty comes up to Dirk, and he wants to show him something. He's like, I got a surprise.
And this is one of my top Philip Seymour Hoffman scenes ever.
Definitely.
I just love this scene. Do you want to play it first and then talk about it?
Let's just play it.
Here. Just keep coming.
All right,
open them. This is it.
It's cool.
Yeah. You want to get inside?
When did you get this?
Yesterday. Well, actually, I had it painted yesterday, so the paint might still be kind of stickier.
This is great, man.
Yeah.
This is really great.
You want to go for a ride? Or?
Wait. Fuck, hell, how much time is that?
I'm sorry,
what the hell is the matter with you?
I'm sorry.
Why did you do that, Scotty?
You look at me sometimes.
What?
I want to know if you like me.
Well, of course. Yeah, I like you, Scotty.
Can I kiss you?
Scotty,
please,
I don't...
Please, can I kiss you on the mouth?
No!
Please let me.
Scotty!
I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to grab you like that or scare you or
it's
anything.
It's all right, man.
Do you want to kiss me or...
Scotty!
No?
What's the matter with you?
I forget it. I'm really drunk. Really, I am. I'm out of my head. I'm really wasted. Really, Dirk,
yeah,
I'm really just wasted. I'm crazy right now. I'm really crazy.
Do you want to go back inside?
Do you like my car, Dirk?
What?
I mean...
Yeah.
Because I wanted to, you know, I wanted to make sure you thought it was cool or else I was going to take it back.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's great, Scotty.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Scotty.
I love you. I really love you.
I love you too, Scotty.
Okay.
Let's go back inside, okay?
All right. All right. Idiot. I'm a fucking idiot.
That it's just I don't know I've definitely had a moment I've just been like saying to myself, oh, you're, like, maybe not, like, in tears or whatever, but just like, oh, you're a fucking idiot. And just that, he puts everything out there.
No, like, I mean, we've all been vulnerable like that. Yeah. If you say you haven't been vulnerable like that, you're a sociopath or an asshole, you know?
Yeah.
Like, just, you're right. Like, he's just like, fucking idiot. Like, just,
I mean, what was that when you saw that? I mean, this is clearly, I mean.
Yeah, it was heartbreaking. It was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That's a great word for it, uncomfortable.
This film, that's another brilliant thing about the film is that there, we said it's funny as hell.
Yeah.
And then there's these moments that are just so uncomfortable.
Yeah, like almost like cringeworthy.
So it brings up so many different emotions during this, you know, during the time period of the film. I don't know exactly how long it is. That's where I would say it's 2.5 or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like during... Do you have the time?
No, all I know that it was originally 300 pages, and he brought it down to 180. So I guess if you want to go,
it's like two hours per page.
Yeah. All right, yeah. Well, but for the you know the 2.5-3 hours that the film is,
yeah,
you're going. There's so many emotions going on. You're getting your heart pulled in different ways, and this scene is just like
yeah. Well, Scotty's definitely like the character that we get his low moment first.
Yeah, because it's before the suicide. So it's like the suicide is kind of like boom, that's the 1980. The countdown to 1980 is happening when that happens. And that's where we go into everyone's lows in the 80s. And yeah, Scotty J he kicks it off with that. That's
And you touched on this before. We don't get too many Scotty J scenes, but you feel for him, you know?
Yeah.
You feel for
him. Yeah, this is his last big scene and we're only like halfway through the movie. For the most part,
and we got him 40 minutes in.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
So it's.
But yeah, and he's still like around in other scenes, which we'll talk about. But I just again like he brings him out. He has Mark Wahlberg. He's like, close your eyes, and then he brings him to this car. And since it's obviously audio, like you know when you're watching it. He's just like, all right, come a little bit closer, come a little closer. And he's just leaning up against the car, and it's not a Corvette, but it's definitely
it's
like
a 280ZX.
There you go.
Honda 280.
but he had it, but what does he say? Like, he just, you know.
Yeah, he just had it painted.
Yeah, he just had it painted, and it's that same, like, whatever color red you want to call that as, you know, as Dirk's Corvette.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just everything. He's just trying.
Years of buildup. He puts it all on the line.
And everything he did, like, he doesn't even care about the car. It's like he just wants Dirk to like it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like, that's the whole thing. Yeah. Like, there is obviously this physical attraction, but he's searching for this acceptance, too. And so he probably, even if he's in this misfit family, I think he's still looking for one person to be like, you are an important part of this and you mean a lot to
mm-hmm.
me.
Yeah.
And that's what, I mean, he's definitely, you know, supposed to be a young, you know, character, you know, like in like age wise and Mark Wahlberg or, you know, like Dirk is supposed to be 17, 18, like at this point, I guess like 20 years old in this scene.
Yeah.
And you know, they're just these, that you know, you still don't know what kind of person you are at that age.
No. Probably I mean, this, it's definitely like a kind of like a, you know, not adolescent coming of age, but like mm-hmm. a coming of age thing. And like he falls flat on his face. I like that he tries to like kiss him again. You know, after
And he just like goes in again. Oh, I just want to kiss you.
Because he just wants it so bad.
Yeah.
Also,
then he just puts it, you know, like and says like, oh, I'm drunk. Yeah.
And Mark Wahlberg just like accepts it. He's not like weirded out. He's weirded out, but he's like, they move on from it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just wants to get out of the situation, but it's like, but he's a porn star, so it's like he's done some crazy things, you know. And but he's just like, okay, whatever, you know.
Yeah. It's just interesting, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, totally. But that like, and the probably the reason why that's his last big scene in the film. Is because at that, you know, because for him, that was his moment. Like that he was in love with Dirk. I mean, it's like,
so that's kind of his payoff, for lack of a better word.
Yeah. Well, to jump ahead a bit. So then he's still like part, it's not like he has a falling out with Mark Wahlberg after this. Because then he's
Dirk just kind of like deletes it or just dismisses it.
Yeah. I mean, he kind of has to, in the sense of like that's not.
Well, look, he's got power.
Not the weirdest thing that's happened in Dirk's life.
No, but he's got power at this point. If he was really freaked out, he could be like, "Get this guy off the
set."
Sure,
that's a good point.
He's not
an
important part of this.
No, that's that's a very fair point. I mean, we get him like before they're planning that, you know, robbery scene, or just, you know, selling the, you know, fake coke or whatever. You know, he's just pacing in the background and saying like, I don't know if that's a good idea, and they're like, shut the fuck up, Scotty. And then even at the end of the movie, we get him, the last time we see him is he's filming the birth of Buck and Jesse's kid, and he's, you know, so I love it that he's kind of even moved on from boom operator to camera operator. And it does, if you really think about it, like that's a very, I mean, hey, they shoot film, I mean, they shoot porn, so that's very intimate stuff, but the birth of a child, and to be like, oh, can you film it or whatever. So I like that he's included in these personal, intimate, like, mm-hmm. lovely, you know, moments in these people's lives.
So I guess we should touch on the Dirk downfall.
Yeah, I mean, so we've had Scotty's low moment, then we lose little Bill William H. Macy's character. He shoots himself and his wife and wife's one or two lovers. And there's even that we see a little bit of tension happening because Amber's doing that documentary, and Dirk has that great, like, oh, Jack lets me block my own scenes, and then Jack is like, I don't let him block his own scenes. And it's just like, ooh, like, it's just like, just from... And just awkwardness right there. And the next thing is that Jack gets a call from the colonel, and the colonel's in jail, and this is just like...
And you said this is one of your favorite scenes or performances, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like Burt Reynolds, you know, nominated for this role, but this is like, sometimes you get those roles that, like, Michael Shannon for Revolutionary Road, you know, small role, nominated for Best Supporting Actor. Robert Ridgely, like, this scene when he's talking to Jack, and so we learn that the colonel, like, has a weakness for, like, filming little kids, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, doing stuff, and he's like, oh, I don't touch him, but the biggest thing is he's saying to Jack, like, I'm your friend, Jack. Like, tell me I'm your friend.
And Jack just...
And the phone, like...
Cuts him off.
Yeah, ends at that point, and he's just knocking on, like, the soundproof glass, and it's just another heartbreaking moment, and, like, the loss of, you know, like, a character or whatever.
And it's a down point for Jack, too, because they're winning his funding.
Yeah, so that's a big...
And he goes strictly to,
to Floyd Gondolini, for funding for VHS.
Right, and he does, like, you know, crappy VHS stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, we mentioned that before. Just it looks terrible.
And then we get Dirk, like, another, like, montage, and Dirk is doing, like, Crystal with Todd, and he's, like, you know... coming in and out, and this is there. I mean, there's still like little funny moments, like in these, you know, darker scenes. Then we get the studio scene. You love.
Oh yeah, yeah. I don't want to miss that studio scene because it's just hilarious.
Yeah, that's.
And that's Robert Downey Jr. Senior, right?
Robert Downey Jr. Senior.
Oh.
Yeah, that's Robert Downey Sr.
Robert Downey
Jr.'s
father, yes.
I didn't know that.
Who is a film director.
A film director. Yeah. And that's actually the one, Don Cheadle's character is Buck Swope, Bucky Swope, which is a...
Putney Swope was his film.
Robert Downey Sr.'s
that's
film.
Cool.
And yeah. Robert Downey Sr.'s... Putney Swope is a big influence on P.T. Anderson.
Oh, okay.
So just a little appreciation there.
Mm-hmm.
But that whole scene of the tapes, like the Catch 22, you know, what is it? You know, because they want to get the EPs, and then he says that's a YP, right? Your problem.
Your problem. Yeah.
And he's like, I don't know this, you know, music industry jargon.
Yeah, yeah. You don't understand.
Yeah. And
we need the magic that's on those tapes. We take it to the record company. They give us the money.
Yeah.
Then we get the money back to you. You're not understanding.
We get it. Like, you own the tapes, but the magic on those tapes, that's ours.
And they're convinced.
Feel the heat.
They're convinced that if they release that they're just, you know, it's awesome.
Yeah,
they think it's awesome.
Mark
and
Wahlberg, who has a decent enough voice, that's what he... Can't, you know, what he came from, whether you like that genre or not, he's just like really like some good bad singing acting going on here. Reed playing the guitar.
He will rock you.
That's
he will feel you. Feel.
Was that on the soundtrack? Did they ever like do a cut of that?
There's like that little, not like a whole song, but I have the soundtrack, and that plays before I think as a little separate 40, like the clip that's in that movie.
Even the fact that they're telling the guy in the studio to raise the vocals.
Yeah, and bring down the bass.
Bring down the bass. And he's just like,
Let's roll it again.
I always imagine that board op said to like his boss, like, yeah, no, these guys suck.
And I love it. And this is like a little scene that Scotty J is just in the background. He carries, Eddie out.
His background scenes for the rest of the movie are just great. Like, even, again, like the whole Dirk Diggler falling out scene, how uncomfortable he looks.
Oh, yeah.
Just
the fight. So this is the big part where we get the limo scene where they end up picking up the guy that's from the scene
Roller Girl,
who's like in college at that point, and Jack starts beating him up, and then Roller Girl, I think she's like killed, like I don't know, like that was pretty,
it's
like kind intense.
Of, this is one of the most scary scenes of the film.
Kicking the guy in the face with a roller skate.
Several times after he was already pummeled by Jack.
Yeah.
And then we get Eddie's low.
Well, just to that scene, the limo scene, I like how it's just like Jack's moment where he knows what he's doing. He's entered this tape thing, but it just is...
He's even on camera, which I don't think was something he did before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And he just takes out his frustration with the whole industry on this guy.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's
he's not
point.
Making
that's
a movie
point.
Anymore. They're driving around picking,
Yeah.
It's just... Yeah. It's not a film anymore. It's...
And Eddie's...
And he sold out. He had to, but you could tell. And it's just...
And
ugh.
Dirk isn't even doing films at this point. He's just back to kind of where he was, where we meet him even like lower, because he needs money for drugs and his busted up Corvette, but he's just showing his, dick to random guys. And then I guess... this is like actually one little scene that I was always a little confused by. So he's doing that, but I guess do people know that there's this, like...
Yeah, there must have been, like, a rumor or something. Or maybe there's just, like, a known to get guys there, and it's, like, a team of gay bashers.
Because that guy's in on it, right? The guy
who's
in the pickup truck with?
Yeah, they're gay bashers.
Yeah. But, no, it was just always, like, it's not like there's, like, self... That was a very, like, premeditated... Point being, it was a very premeditated plot. It's not like there's cell phones, like, okay, I'm in the truck right now.
No. Obviously, those guys were surrounding there. Yeah. It was probably, like, a known spot where you could, look at guys' dicks.
Yeah.
Yeah, like male prostitutes or whatever.
Yeah. And then,
once again, super uncomfortable moment. It's like,
and after that we get the one great little, we had like 80 set on the screen at one point, and then it just says, long way down, one last thing. And I showed this in college, like in an editing class, we get one of the greatest films, and this also had influence on a scene in your movie, right? With the firecrackers and everything. We finally get to meet Alfred Molina's character.
And I mentioned this to you on the phone the other day. That's how I remember it was 2 hours and a half for this film. That when this comes up, there's like 20 minutes left of the film, and I'm like, isn't this one of the last scenes, if not like the second to last scene?
Yeah, but this scene plays out for
half. I didn't realize how long this scene
was. It's like a 15-minute scene.
Tension. Total tension.
Oh,
builds,
it was just like
builds and builds.
Metaphorically and phorically, with the firecrackers. So Rahad Jackson, and he's just a wealthy party going guy, right?
Yeah. Low level. Who's the crew that goes to his home?
You've got Todd and Reed and.
Now Scotty's with them, like while they're planning this, right?
Yeah,
and he's like, "Oh, I think he tells them not to go."
Yeah, and they tell him to, shut up or whatever.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And he just gets told to fuck off and shut up a lot in this film. And so the three of them go, and they're trying to, I guess that's what, baking soda or something like that.
Yeah, they're trying to rip the guy off.
Yeah, for $5,000 worth of coke, and they've just got a big. There's three people in the house. You got the big black security guard that's got like double pistols. You got Rahad Jackson and then Cosmo, right? Isn't that his name? Oh, that's Cosmo. He's Chinese.
It's like his little boy, boy toy.
Yeah. It's like a boy, like a Chinese boy, right?
Yeah, just in short shorts walking around throwing firecrackers into the air of the house. And you get two great songs play. You get Sister Christian
and Jesse's Girl.
And then Jesse's Girl and the awesome. Awesome mixtape.
Mm-hmm. Zach's awesome. I made tapes after that. Zach's awesome. Yeah. Mix. I think I have like 11 versions, 11 volumes of it.
That's awesome. I read that actually Alfred Molina had never heard either of those songs.
Really?
Before this movie, which is actually like 97. Really?
Well, he's like a Shakespearean British actor originally.
Yeah, so I guess he was very,
into that world.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But what are your thoughts on this scene?
Well, you know, like you said, like we used that when we were making we shot our film in 98, in the summer of 98, and I got that on VHS. I think it was VHS. I don't think it was DVD at that time. But I know DVDs existed at that time, but I think I had it on VHS, and we're living in Brooklyn in Greenpoint, and we had this little, me and my brother had this little railroad apartment, and we had the whole cast in there, and we had a little 19-inch, tube TV, and we'd, like, huddle around it, and we'd watch scenes, especially that scene, because, not that, the film doesn't, my film doesn't have, like, serious tension like that, but how the shot of Mark Wahlberg's face...
Yeah, they just linger on it.
They just linger on that shot while you're hearing the firecrackers go off, and you just see that it's not dialogue. It's just a shot of a face, and that's why I think it's such a great performance too. Of you can do a voiceover right there, saying what the fuck did I get myself into? I've sunk. I'm what happened to me? And
it looks like he's going crazy in a way.
Yeah, and well, wouldn't you? I mean, with the firecrackers, you could die right now because you got the armed bodyguard and you're gonna rob this guy. You know,
I'm surprised the guy didn't taste it right away.
And yeah, so we would sit there, and especially there was a specific scene in my film where I wanted the character to have a realization that in a much lighter level, he's been a dick to his friends, basically. Yeah. And he's in a subway station, and we just did a shot of him. I was like, this is what I want. This is what I want. I want you to, in a different turn, and there's not tension and stuff like this scene, but I just like, I want you to, like, I don't want dialogue here. I just want the audience to see you realizing I've been such an asshole, to my friends during this time. So we watched that scene over, and it was awesome. Like our inspiration, this film, to
That face really reminds the next character just makes me think of Jack Nicholson in The Shining. There's just a very going insane and just alone with your thoughts. I mean, but in this scene, he's not even alone, but he's just in this vacuum.
Well, this is a guy who was so high, on top of the world, his world, is just bam.
And now he's as low as you can get, and he's like, he could die right now. It's like,
well, yeah, and then he comes very close to death because Todd doesn't go with the original plan, and he knows that Rahad has a safe in his room or something like that, and pulls out a gun and ends up shooting the bodyguard. I don't know what happens to Cosmo, if he just goes to the ground or something like that. But then Rahad goes into his room, and Todd's about to go in there, and he blast him with a shotgun, and then he's shooting at Reed and Dirk, and they get up. Reed just runs off, and Dirk gets into the Corvette that then breaks down, and then we get to him pretty much just going back to Jack's house, and I guess Jack just leaves the door unlocked because he just walks in there. And I love this because they don't show Jack's face for a long time. It's just kind of a medium shot of behind Jack's torso, and he's really filling up the frame, and then you just have Eddie Small facing us in the background and asking saying that he's sorry and asking him if he can come back. And
it's largely a happy ending.
Yeah, I mean, you get great usage of the Beach Boys' "God Only Knows," and we get another.
And what a great song! Using that. We've talked about the soundtracks is phenomenal, but the way the music interacts with the actual film, and especially that, it's time I hear that song,
it's not just
zaps
music of,
me right back to that to the end of
oh,
that film.
Yeah.
It's like
it's not just music of the time, but poignant music for the scene.
Yeah,
it's really used well. In that first party scene, you've got Three Dog Night, Mama Told Me Not to Come, and Spill the Wine. Then we get kind of this final montage of we see Buck. Well, in that we briefly said it, but in that shootout scene in the donut shop, Buck ends up taking, that's his low moment, and he takes that money, so he opens up Buck's super cool stereo store. And Amber's directing the commercial, so that's kind of her little jump, after she's lost, you know, like, doesn't have her, that child anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We get that great, wait, by the way, in that, like, one part, we get that great coked up moment between her and Roller Girl.
Oh, yeah.
Of them being like, are you gonna, can you be my mom? Can I call you mom?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So good.
And like we said, the big theme here is family.
Yeah.
Family.
The definitely the person stole the lowest moment in this film is the Colonel, because he's just getting beaten up in the jail cell by that one guy. If Maurice opens up a new bar, but it's misspelled Rodriguez with a Q versus Gaze with a G.
The Rodriguez brothers or something like that, and it spelled it wrong. He's like, no!
What happened? Yeah, Reed is doing magic, mm-hmm. and then, like I said, you know, Buck and Jesse, they have a kid, and
mm-hmm.
he's in the pool or whatever, and we just see, you know, Jack is back to being, like, a father, and he's just walking around the house, and this is one last great, like, long shot where Buck is talking about a stereo.
Mm-hmm.
Jesse is painting a picture. We pass a picture of where little Bill killed himself, and, like, there's a nice little, you know, oil painting of him in that spot.
Yeah.
And then we get Dirk in the room, getting ready, full Miami Vice look with the pink shirt and the white jacket, doing his very, and it is like an homage, specifically an homage to Raging Bull. And
well, which is an homage to, what's it called? On the Waterfront.
Oh, yeah. So
is it On the Waterfront? Yeah, I could have been in Content.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so, and this is, then we get the final, the payoff, we get to see the whole rooster.
And that's not really his penis, right?
No, it's a prosthetic.
No, it's a prosthetic.
Okay.
And Mark Wahlberg got to keep it. He took it home with
him.
Yeah. Nice little,
that's cool.
Nice little prize for the fans.
Yeah.
My earliest memory of this film is as a kid, and I didn't see the movie, but watching, I think, the MTV Movie Awards with, like, my family or, like, my uncle or something, and, like, that's how, now that you mentioned it's a prosthetic, like, Boogie Nights won Best Effects, and they had, like, a penis with a top hat come and accept the award.
Oh, really?
Really?
It's, like, the weirdest thing
that's
in the world.
So,
and I'm watching
weird.
That as a kid, I was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
And it's, like, uncomfortable, like, with your family, you
of
know?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah,
wow, that just came back to me.
Wow.
So, this movie, again, critically acclaimed, 92% Rotten Tomatoes. Everyone I know who sees it loves it, and that's just like, it's like a universal thing.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't met too many haters of this film, have you?
No, there's like some other P.T. Anderson films that like people, you know, go and have like, you know, it's like a little 50-50 on, but this, I think, all around is pretty much everyone respects this movie. I think that's definitely the best way. You might not love it, it might be a topic that you find awkward or something like that, but in the end, it's a masterpiece of filmmaking.
And we can't understate what it did for Philip Seymour Hoffman's career.
No, this is definitely, this put him on the map, especially in the eyes of his peers in the industry.
Mm-hmm. Any last thoughts on Boogie Nights then? Anything you want to add? Or
I'm just...
You too, Zach.
This was an episode I was really looking forward to, and, I mean, I think for the time that we discussed movies, we did a pretty good job of, you know, covering what this film is, and, I mean, Philip Seymour Hoffman, he's just... this is a role where he's a great character, and it's a really interesting one that I think a lot of people, one way or another, can relate to. But
I'm so happy we're finally, again, getting to these films and talking about these films.
Yeah, I mean, I love this film.
Me too. And seeing it, you know, I don't, that's the thing, it's like, it's not like I, even back then, I didn't go see films a lot. Like multiple viewings. Like, I was telling Kyle this, you know, because I know he sees the Star Wars films 50 million times each in the theater, but
Well, you gotta see them.
I didn't do that very, you know, there was very few films that I was like, I went back to, there's films I've seen a million times, but I'm in the code of the theater to keep wanting to go back to see it, you know, and it was just like, this film was just, that's why I went and saw it, you know.
Awesome, cool. So, Zach, is there anywhere people can follow you or look you up, your IMDb or something?
Yeah, sure. Don't follow me.
I don't know. We always ask our guests.
I'm a recluse.
Sometimes they want to plug something.
I got
phrasing.
Plug.
No, Zach, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, it was great.
Had a blast
having you, and thank you for listening and supporting, being my mentor, my muse. So weird. No, that's weird. Let's end it on a weird note.
Well, on that note, thanks everyone for listening today, tuning in. We had a blast.
Yeah, thanks Hoff fans, and keep being great Hoff fans, and check us out on Facebook and subscribe on iTunes.
P.S. I Love Hoffman.
Google Play, yeah. P.S. I Love Hoffman. That is the name. Learn it, love it.
CageClub.me as well. You could find us there. And
all the other great podcasts, including Cage Club, Keanu Club.
A new podcast that we actually really love here called Wistful Thinking.
Ooh, this is a fun one. I hope I get to guest on that.
Me too. And really special announcement.
Special news.
Next week, we will not be doing a Philip Seymour Hoffman film.
No, not a regular episode talking about one of his films.
No.
One of his roles.
We will have a special episode next week where we will go over basically the first third of his career.
Yeah.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, the early years.
The early years.
So definitely tune into that. We're going to have some guests who we've had previously on. We're going to be talking about some of his short films.
Yeah, some stuff that, again, we were covering all of his feature films, but this we get to talk about a music video he's in, another short film.
Yeah, even some silly stuff, some a Law & Order episode.
Yeah, TV appearances. So definitely tune in and
like, follow, share. Please, we
subscribe.
Love you guys. We're loving the feedback.
Yeah.
Keep it going. Thanks so much, guys.
Bye. Sex a thing, you. I believe in miracles.